on, Juice. Well, I'm not sure what to title this one. But I want to talk about a certain type of training. What's missing from our training? I think I've talked about this before. There was a episode of Grey's Anatomy. And no, I didn't watch that show. My wife did. I tried. It was fun for one or two episodes, but after that I lost interest when it was just so ridiculous. There was an episode where they had an attending or a resident, and there was an MCI coming in, and he said, came up to one of the head surgeons. He's like, hey, we know there's an MCI coming in. We're ready for everything. And the trauma surgeon goes, are you an EMT? Says, no. He says, and you're not ready for everything. I thought, we're finally getting our props, right? We're supposed to be ready for everything. But are we? Here's the thing, right? So I won't go like super deep into my training, but I'll rattle off a couple. Obviously EMT, I had, so that gives you your BLS. I've had trauma training. I've had helicopter operations. I've had swift water training due to the fire department. I've ACLS, for those that don't know, it's advanced cardiac life support. I've had pediatric advanced life support certs. I have my BLS instructor. I've taken all kinds of de-escalation tactic classes, patient management, management of assaultive behavior, EVOC, wildland training, and even in that, it includes a small class on weather, right? Like you learn about weather patterns and how to read what's going on and things like that. So we've done it all, right? Most of us have, if you've been doing this for any length of time. But there is one I haven't received, and I think the reason is it doesn't exist. But let's get back to that in a sec. Like most people, I went into EMS and fire service kind of blind. And what I mean by that is I didn't know what I was getting myself into on the mental side. What I saw was lights and sirens, flashy things, lots of noise, having fun, destruction, if you will. I mean, what other person other than a fire department can come into your house, tear it completely apart, rip it all the drywall off, rip down the ceiling, and they thank you on the way out? It's the only one I know, right? But nobody wants to tell you about that when you're trying to get in, right? I remember being a teenager going to do my first ride out, and it was like, oh, it's the greatest job in the world, and we could do this, and we could do that, and cool, this is something I could do. I did a ride out with Corona Fire Department in Corona, California, and I wish I could remember the captain's name. I really do, but I can't. And if anybody from Corona Fire Department happens to be listening, there was a captain that worked there mid-90s. I don't think he ever promoted to BC, but he was loved by everybody. He was just one of those guys that was super, super cool. And so we're doing this ride along, and we've been doing some stuff all day, and they were like, hey, let's go do some actual training. You can see what it's like. I'm like, cool. And no sooner do we pull into this cul-de-sac to do some training. I don't know what we were going to do. They had something planned, but they go, oh, that's us. I was like, what do you mean that's us? He's like, well, we got a call. I said, oh, what is it? He said, it's a medical aid. All right. Lights and sirens across the district. And as we pull up, the guy goes, hey, this is probably going to be a dead body. I was like, oh, all right. And at this point in my life, I had never seen a dead body. I think I was 14, 15 at the oldest. We pull up to the house, and I'm sitting in the engine. They all jump off, and they're like, are you coming? I'm like, am I allowed to? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, all right, let's go. So I jump out, and I walk up, but I stop at the front door. He says, are you coming in? I was like, can I? He's like, oh, dude, you're going in. I said, all right. Get to the bedroom, still standing there. He's like, dude, get in here. The firefighter comes over, goes, come here. You need to see this. If this is a job you want to do, you need to see this. All right. Sure enough, guy had passed away coming back from the restroom. They're assuming he vagled out and heart never started, I guess. I don't know. That's what they told me at the time, but I don't remember exactly. It's been a long time, but dude was slumped over the bed, and the fireman, who was a medic, starts showing me lividity and how rigor mortis sets in. They let me, like, manhandle this body. Like, they weren't even concerned with evidence, which it wasn't. It was a natural death. The guy was old, and there was not going to be a coroner issue or nothing like that. So, but didn't think anything of it. And I just thought, oh, whatever, you know. So I've been kind of been that stonewall in a way, right? I always have been. And that probably goes back to my childhood and the crap I went through there. And I'm very emotionless child. I use that word a lot. Did it last time too. Emotionless. As a child, I didn't have a lot of emotion. And so when I got into fire and EMS, I actually started taking the nasty stuff. So we would run on a peds or whatever, you know, traumatic peds or whatever. I would usually handle a lot of that stuff. So my partners didn't have to, or anybody else on scene didn't have to, because I didn't have kids. And when I was older, I didn't have my first child till I was 40. So I didn't worry about that. Like, it didn't affect me, I didn't think, until it did, right? I believed in the attitude of suck it up. That's the era I grew up in. So I sucked it up. We just did what we had to do. One of the things that happened to me when I worked in LA, and a lot of people probably call BS on this, and that's fine, you can, but I'm telling you, this is legit. Everything I tell you is 100% true. I don't need to, listen, I've been saying this forever, and I still, you know, I've been saying this since I started in this industry 15, 16 years ago. We in this industry do not have to exaggerate our calls. None of it. We don't. Because even if we don't, 99% of people are not going to believe us. They're not. They're not going to believe the stuff we've seen. They won't. They can't, right? Until they see it for themselves. And I've talked to people, obviously, through social media. I had a guy one time years ago on the EMS Lounge Facebook page. He told me he had never worked a full arrest in 13 years. And some of you are going, that's believable. And I agree. What he couldn't believe was that I, at one point in my time in LA, we worked a full arrest every 8 calendar days. And he goes, one a week. Yes, but with our schedule, it was every other shift. So one full arrest for every other shift. And we did that for months on end. It was ridiculous. And people to this day still won't believe me. And that's okay. They don't have to. At the hospital, I had a day one time where we were working 4 full arrests at one time. And you literally just went from one to another to another to another. We actually responded to 6 full arrests inside the hospital in one day. And those are working full arrests. These are not, oh, nothing happened, it's canceled, don't worry, or it's a DB or whatever. No, no. These were working full arrests. And some people don't believe that. And that's okay. But, you know, when you're talking, the percentage right now, survivor percentage of full arrests right now is out of hospital, is 8%. And the 4 we worked in at the one time were all out of hospital cardiac arrest. The 6 were all, or not all the 6, but they were a mix of pre-hospital and in the hospital. So a lot of mixture went on, but even still, if you take 8%, the numbers suck, right? The toll that it takes. What, when you're doing 4 full arrests at one time, what are you going to talk about in a post-action meeting? Nothing. Or an after-action meeting, whatever you want to call them. There's nothing you can talk about. We got our butts handed to us. You know, and you can be working those, and then the trauma drops. So you go from working 4 full arrests straight to a trauma, major trauma. We are level 2 trauma center. You know, and when you're in the field, you don't get the time to, you can't be like, you know, I could use a break. Nope, you just keep running. That's what we're told. That's what we're taught. That's how we work. I can tell you, of 4 years of working in LA, and our average call volume for my box in 12 hours was 9 runs. That was average. And we would transport 60-70% of those, right? So, I mean, we were transporting 5-6 patients every single day, bare minimum. Out of every single event I went to, I think twice I was asked if I needed to go to an after-action event and debrief. Twice. And I can't tell you how many nasty calls I've been on. I can't. You know, I teach CPR now. I that's my business. What I tell them a lot of time is, you know, 99.9% of people wake up in the morning and CPR, doing CPR is not even on their brain. We would wake up and go to work going, there's a really good chance I'm going to be doing CPR at some point in the day. Maybe even more than once. It's just the reality of it, right? And stick with me. I'm going kind of somewhere with this. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see. A lot of people don't think that's legit. A lot of people think I'm making this stuff up. And I'm not. I'm not. It's crazy. I mean, think about it. So I did an interview with Holly from the TV show Nightwatch that used to be on A&E. And if you go back on Spotify, you can listen to the old episodes. And you can find the one with Holly. She was saying that they would, each crew would get 6 GSWs a night. Every single shift. Every shift. They got GSW every single shift. 6 of them. Mentally, you can't sustain that. There is no possible way. The toll that that will take on you. And I know people out there be like, no, I wouldn't take it. It's going to take its toll. Because there's going to be peds involved. There's going to be nastiness involved. And none of it's, and there's nothing ideal about it. One of the things I teach my students when I'm doing CPR classes is, when you do CPR for the first time, even the first probably 5 times, man, you're going to be shaking. Your adrenaline's going to be running. You're going to be emotional wreck. And you won't even be able to tie your shoes. You're going to be shaking so bad, you're not going to be able to tie your shoes. And anybody who says otherwise is lying. Everybody says, oh, I did it first time. I had no problem. I did it. No, you weren't. Maybe on the outside. Look, firing EMS, we're like ducks, right? I mean, some of you know where I'm going with this. What do I mean we look like a duck? A duck on top of water, swimming, looks calm, cool, and collective. What's that duck look like underwater? He's paddling like a madman, looking like he's about to get eaten by a shark, right? So we're ducks swimming on water. We look calm and cool on the outside, but inside we're freaking out. Now, I will say this. After you do CPR enough times, it's like tying your shoes. It's another day at the office. You just do your thing. It's not a big deal, right? And we learn to compartmentalize. We learn to shove it to the back of our brain, put it back in the occipital region, and just leave it there. So we don't have to deal with it. And what do we always say? Oh, I'll deal with that later. Nah, we don't deal with it later. There is a way to deal with it later, and we'll go over that, but there you don't. That's legit what they have found is we compartmentalize and we take those memories, we put them in the back of our brain to deal with later. And unfortunately, most of us don't. We'll get to that in a sec. There was a day we were doing CPR. And I'll cut that story down, but basically we end up losing a guy. We worked this guy for way too long, but anyways, we're working this guy up, and later on in the day, come out of the break room at the hospital, and security guard goes, hey, man, are you okay? I said, yeah, I'm fine, why? And I'm kind of like looking myself over, make sure I'm not bleeding anywhere. And he goes, well, you know, you did CPR on that guy, and he died. I said, well, you got to understand, too, we do CPR only on dead people. So you kind of go into it knowing they're dead. He's like, no, what I mean is you didn't get him back. And I just, yeah, that's kind of what happens. I mean, we got an 8% survival rate. It's not good. And that's, you know, picture perfect is 8%. If nothing's perfect, picture perfect. So you can imagine your percentages suck. He goes, well, and it turns out later that he was going through nursing program. He was trying to get his nursing prereqs done. He wanted to know more about it and our mentality of it because I think he was kind of freaked out by it. And he used to be a cop. But he was still kind of freaked out by it, I think. So he goes, well, what do you think about when you're doing CPR? Now, mind you, I'd been doing this for a long time at this point. I'd been in the hospital probably 6 years at the time. I said, well, it really just depends on the time of day. And he looks at me and he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, case in point, this morning. We were working that guy up. It was, what, 9:30? He goes, yeah. I said, we worked this guy for like 2 hours. It was ridiculous. And I said, well, it was about 9:30. I hadn't eaten breakfast, so I was trying to decide whether I wanted the breakfast burrito or whether I wanted the sunrise sandwich to eat. The look on his face, priceless. Like, just looked at me like I had zero heart. And it's not that we don't. You guys know this. It's not that we don't have heart. It's just we've detached ourselves from it so much. And that's all we can do, right? We can get help, but most of you won't. Whatever. You should. And so it kind of brings me to, I love it and I laugh when, you know, employers and talk about how, oh, we care about our employees and we want you to succeed. And what are they doing to help you? So when I was at, I'll just call them out, when I was at Care Ambulance and even at the hospital, I can remember looking to get some help. I my wife was pushing me for it, and I kind of knew I needed it. So went to HR benefits, said, hey, you know, I'm kind of wanting to get some help with this. And he said, oh, yeah, we got this great program for you. It doesn't cost you a thing. Here's a flyer, phone number on there. You can go online. You can schedule all your appointments. You can do it virtually. You can do it online. You can do it in person, whatever you want to do. I said, oh, okay, cool. That's great, right? They're going to give us some counseling and therapy in this net. So that night I go home and go online and looking it up. They gave me 5 visits. 5. I think they were 45-minute sessions. It takes a good 3 to 5 sessions just for your therapist to get to know you. And that's if you're being open and upfront. How is that going to help? It's not. I know. I went to therapy. I did quite a few sessions. It wasn't 5. It was more than that. I went 8 or 9 at least. And I didn't go for stuff with EMS. I actually went for some private stuff, which I'm going to talk about that in a second. But I come on here and I talk about problems that we have or things that employers are doing wrong and then what's the cure. This one I actually think I have somewhat of a solution. These companies need to start hiring therapists. And I was like, oh gosh, it's so expensive. No, it's not. It's not. What's a therapist make? Well, if you're going to hire them and they're not in their own practice, I did quick research, and I say quick, I mean, I Googled salaries for therapists. They ranged anywhere from 55 to 127, $1,000 a year. What's your EMTs making? I know an EMT that makes 6 figures. Tons of overtime, but he's still making 6 figures. They've got the money. Why don't they hire a therapist? 2 therapists. These people can schedule appointments. The therapist can work Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. Doesn't matter. Our schedules vary. There's days we have off. We can come in on our day off during the week. Put them on Monday through Friday. Pay them $75 a year. Pay them $80 a year. Doesn't matter. Just get them in there. Get them there and make them available for people to talk. They don't even have to be on site. They can be off site. And to be honest with you, with funding nowadays, you can probably get a grant. You can get a good grant writer. I bet you they can get you money to pay for it. Guarantee you write a grant for that. You could get it if you're good at it. So, any of you who are employers, which I doubt you're listening to me, but if anybody ever asks what can we do, or do we have a suggestion box, throw that in there. Hire a therapist. Give us access to 24/7 therapy. or even 5 days a week, just free therapy. You know, I've always said, if you guys remember back long enough, I've always been a big proponent of getting help, and I never got help. I didn't get help until 2 years ago. And realistically, I didn't get help from my PTSD from the field. So what had happened was, During COVID, I had to send my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, and my wife to the emergency room with COVID. And I'm going to leave you with this. I will go deeper into the story next time. See what I'm doing? I'm hooking you. It's an interesting story. It's a crazy story for me, and I think it would be for anybody. And I get it. I know there's people that were lost during COVID and have worse stories than mine, but I'll tell you mine. And that comes next week. Hopefully next week, if I can get it recorded in time. But I'll do the next episode on what happened with me and why I ended up going to get therapy. And if I'm brave enough, I'll tell you what I saw during therapy, because I did some PTSD therapy that is pretty interesting, and they really get down and dirty, and you start seeing things that you never thought you would see or think about or hear or do or whatever. And it's crazy, and you're going to think I'm a nut job. I know it, but that's okay. Like I said, I'm deciding whether or not I want to tell my whole in-depth story, but I will tell you what happened with their illness and what happened, how sick they were. But I can tell you in basically within 24 hours, I got two phone calls and told once in person that they weren't going to survive. So it was fun. Put that down under sarcasm, but it wasn't. And went through a lot. And so I went and got help with that. And I'll tell you about most of it, maybe all of it, if you tune in next time. So got some things working. So come back next week and hear the next episode. So hit subscribe. Leave us a comment. If you can, go to iTunes. Do me a favor. I'm really asking you guys. Do me a favor. Go to iTunes and leave me a review. Good or bad, leave me a review. Puts us in the algorithm. I'd really like to get bumped up. I really want people to start hearing some of the stuff I want to talk about. And if we can do some live shows and stuff, if the numbers get where I think they need to be before we even start doing that, would be awesome. So please go do that anywhere you can. Leave a comment. Share it with your friends. Don't share it with your friends, but no, really do. Other than that, have a good one. Keep lounging.